Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, my good friend Aristotle Loomis and his co-founder and my new friend, Chad Bronstein. They are the co-founders, among many other co-founders, of Philo. HelloPhilo.com. We took a little trip down memory lane on this show, and it was awesome. Beyond just the reality of being an entrepreneur and what that whole struggle takes, Aristotle has done it before, but he's done it in a way that very few people have, and it's, I mean, he's a great follow on everything. A. Loomis, if you haven't followed it, you need to follow him. We talk about that. We talk about building a team. They raised $18 million in what seemed like a snap, and I know that it was not easy to do, but I think for all of you, I'm going to leave it at this. This is a blueprint for how I think companies in the future, whether it's Chicago or otherwise, need to be looking at the way they start their business. It's not about following a script or the startup blueprint or whatever. It is, what is the problem I'm trying to address and what are all the things I'm going to need to do it? And then just getting it done. And if you want to raise real money and you have no track record, you're going to need people who have a track record, and you're going to need to build a team that, when I look at the world, I think this team can accomplish this mission. And if they can't, then that I'm not betting on that horse. And Chad and the team are absolutely a horse I would bet on for that. So I'm going to end everything right there and just go straight into my interview, because I really do think this is one of the better shows that you'll get to learn from. This is my interview with Aristotle Loomis and Chad Bronstein, the co-founders of Philo. What's going on, my friend?
Not much, man. How's everything with you?
Things are good. I feel like I've seen you more times in the last like couple of weeks than
Well, that's intentional. I was trying to get on the show. So
you have my number. You
can exactly.
We have our friend at Dear Mighty Things, and he listens to most of the stuff. So if he hears this, I don't know if this is a good thing or bad. He pings the shit out of me like that. I give my cell phone to every entrepreneur, and it's like, if you have questions, like, feel free. And I'm keynoting his, or doing that, whatever, the moderator, whatever the hell it's called, the MC, whatever. For Dear Mighty Things.
You're my MCM.
You're my social MC.
I was about to say, Aristotle is like a constant, I'm afraid what he's going to post on Instagram.
You have to, but like, he knows how to get clicked. This dude was a checkmark before checkmarks were checkmarks.
Thanks,
like,
man.
They built the system. We're like, who are the people we need to get on Instagram to make this work? Aristotle Loomis. That's what they were thinking.
And because I couldn't get on that, I ended up using Republic as my alternative.
We had to remove him from our Hello Philo Instagram.
Oh my God.
That's true. That's true story.
Did you really?
Yeah, because he was videographing himself work out. We're like, dude, we're a company here. We can't have you actually working out.
I think you can, though. I think you can do it. I think Philo is that is brand. It's on brand, right?
I guess.
I was wearing the logo.
It's like just a cloud of smoke behind him.
So the funny story with Aristotle is he sets up a photo shoot for us, and he buys all the swag, and it happens to be like all, you know, guys that are in shape.
Yeah, of
and
course.
We take the pictures, and everybody thinks that we're a personal training studio.
Why is that, again, not? This is going to be the best show of all time. To wrap up things on my comments, so Michael Gelfman, who we have this big event with Dear Mighty Things, I give him my phone number, and he texts me, I mean, sometimes like 5-6 times plus a day. And it's like, I'm like, I'm happy to help, whatever. But I also just laugh because it's like, there's a handful of people who know, and they know how to like use it. Aristotle, I don't think of you in the same light of that sometimes, but like you.
But it's borderline sometimes.
But it's but like, you tag the right people and everything. And I just think I tell these entrepreneurs, like, you have to. We talked about this at the event we were at on Monday. You have to have no fear.
Yep.
You have to go after shit and just be like, if you don't like, I've said this numerous people coming on the show. I had one person say to me, this is like 3 years ago, like, oh, you know, the sponsors in the studio. Like, oh, I don't know. And it's like, you're a CEO. Like, you sell shit all day. Like, if you're not used to being sold to, then you're not ready for this. Like, you're not ready for this.
Today, you want to hear the story how I met Aristotle?
Please. Oh my God, yes. This is
okay. So
I want to know like where he has photos of you or something and how he got into this, because this whole thing is just.
So Aristotle was running Ellison, and my college roommate / best friend was like, you got to meet this kid Aristotle. He's got this sunglass brand, and he starts nagging me. I'm like, oh shit, he's starting to becoming pretty annoying. So he's persistent, keeps reaching out. Finally, I take a meeting with them, and I end up, you know, spending like almost $75,000 with Ellison for all my
It was ends up being $250,000 in totality.
Yeah, but, yeah, quarter million in totality.
So the first contract.
I was an investor. Became an investor, and we created a corporate structure for Ellison. But it was like, this kid has a heart of gold. He's persistent. Yeah. He's super annoying. But at the same time, it was like, he's got a heart of gold. And I can't, like you said, you can't disrespect the hustle.
Yeah.
So he sold me on the hustle. And so that's how we became friends over about 5 years, like 6 year span. And then this is how this came together. When I started the company, he was at Marcus Lemonis. And I'm like, Aristotle, I'm going to start something in cannabis, and I come from the technology background. And I was like, you should do it with me. And he's like, you know what? I think it's time. And that's how, this came about.
And he immediately started posting pictures of him working out.
Yes.
It's like, give me the Instagram handle, and then boom.
Well, the thing is,
you're going to go viral for all the right reasons.
I knew what I was getting.
Right? Well, yeah.
You knew what I was getting with Aristotle. And you get a hard goal, and you get a guy that loves social media.
He lives on
it. Leverages
social media. My wife and I were looking at, following your Instagram during your wedding. And we're like, where is his wife? It was like the day or two after. It was like picture of you and Mark Lawrence and Stephen Galanis and like all these guys like roaming around. Like, I think that's definitely her elbow. That she's there.
Well, I told her, if you have a bad attitude, don't show up. Don't ruin the best day of my life. I'm sorry.
My wife, I would have been at the altar just standing there with my friends like, she made the right decision.
I think I did. So,
no, yeah. That's pretty funny.
So here's the thing. Like, we're going to get into Philo in the business. But like, when you're and this is really for every business, but because everything now is a digital, it's a brand. Everything has to have a brand, unless it's just a hidden company and the brand literally doesn't matter. But even then, it's still trusted to somebody because they're buying it.
Yep.
If you don't have a digital native at the root of what you're building, I'll use an example that is tangent to none of us. G2. So locally here, G2. And they were G2 Crowd before the G2. They hired Ryan Benici as CMO. And I would argue that Tim Handorf and Godard Abel are two of the smartest entrepreneurs this city has. And Godard's had numerous exits, 7-figure, 9-figure, etc. That company was fantastic, and we would talk about them all the time. The last year and a half since Ryan Benici came on, they have raised $100 million. They've just blown up. And I don't think it has anything to do with the content and whatever. I think it has to do with they have a digital native who just naturally knows without thinking. You can't pay for that. Who knows exactly how to construct a brand that you're going to love, engage, and trust. And then, of course, in your case, there's a marketing component of this. Well, I mean, obviously, the whole thing is a marketing component. How can we do that and stay compliant and stay true to who we are and not look like we're posting pictures of us working out when we're, you know what I mean?
So,
like,
yeah. So that's a great point. And especially in this industry that we're in right now with cannabis, there's not a lot of marketing natives in the business.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
So when I set out and the team set out to do this, we were looking at it as kind of a hypothesis that, you know, I was at a big company. I was a global chief revenue officer, and we were starting to see a lot of brands come in our platform for CBD and THC, and no one wanted to touch it because the compliance rules. Yep. So we, you know, took a deep dive into it. And you said something else that's really important. It's the digital native, but it's also the team. When you build when you're building a company, people laugh, but I use sports analogies.
Yeah, always.
Right? So it's like running, it's like building an NFL franchise. You have to have an offensive coach, a tight ends coach, defensive coach. And so what we did was had all these people that were around me in my career that touched me somehow in a good way.
Yeah, and in an appropriate way.
Yeah, appropriate way. Sorry, that came off wrong. But it's 1 degree of separation.
Yep.
So Aristotle, I work with, super great entrepreneur. He's our chief of staff. Nicole Cosby, who just came on board, she was the SVP of Publicis for compliance and partnerships. She just came on board as our chief of data compliance. Katie Ford, our board member, was at Publicis, and now she's like, I can't name the name, but she's the head of global brand at a pretty large social platform. Then Michael Chalk, who's our COO, he came from MediaIQ, and he was running as a chief revenue officer, a large technology organization, and it just keeps on going. Conrad Lisco, our CMO, is Co-Collective, and then which is a creative agency, and Brent Skoda is my founder.
So you're taking the best people from the most important categories within the industry that you are going to conquer.
Correct, and each, you know, each
and those
person,
people are going to be capital for everyone who you hire underneath.
Yep,
is going to have someone to go to, the offensive line coach.
When you're raising money, you have to in this world. It's they look at you. You said something else. It's credibility. Yep. I would say the first step before they even look at technology is, do I believe that this group of people can execute? And so that before they give you money, it's like you're gambling. So what are you going to gamble on? Are you going to gamble on, you know, some of the best coaches in the game, or are you going to gamble on people that haven't done it?
Yep.
And so that was the first step. When we closed on $18 million, it wasn't easy, right? In cannabis, currently where we're at right now, there's CapEx in Toronto where all the stock, where they all trade, and they're down right now. And they're going to come back up for sure, but it's a hard market to raise capital.
Yep.
We did something different, though. So we came in and we don't touch the flower or plant. We focused on building a technology that is helping the current immature space in technology become mature.
I want to make a note to come back on this about the money you raised, not about how much you raised or why, but more about just what that actually signifies. The other thing that you mentioned that I think is kind of important here, Aristotle, because of the stuff that you went through with Republic and just you've been on The Profit and you've been all this stuff. You have a unique insight into this because I would love to. I've kicked around the idea of like an outtakes type of show. The number of entrepreneurs that have come in here or that I've met through various channels that I almost get into an argument with because we start fighting about the value of their tech. And I tell them it's worth shit because technology is ubiquitous. I can find a team that can build damn near anything. The difference might be my intuitiveness to the customer user, and there's all kinds of stuff. I'm not saying that the tech is worthless, but right now, without anything else, it's worthless. It's the people and the structure, and I'm betting on you, I'm at least speaking from an investor standpoint. When I'm looking at you, I'm going, I know that these guys, that I know Chad can do this. I know he comes from this. I know he's already produced this. I know Aristotle has this. I know this person does this. I know the track record that I know that if there was a group of people, if I could build a SWAT team to take this on, this is who I'd build. I'm betting on you. I just assume you're going to build all the right shit to get it done.
I couldn't agree more with your philosophies. I mean, technology, if it's not commercialized, means nothing.
Yeah.
So back to the point of like, you have a lot of smart engineers, but they need a commercial person to actually take that to market.
Yeah.
And companies fail when they have a lot of egos. And that was what we were concerned about. You know, we brought on a lot of talent.
Yep.
My original founder I grew up with since I was 5 years old. He's in capital markets and an inventor. And then Aristotle, all these people, we all spend a lot of time. No one's perfect.
Yep.
But we got to a point where now we're gelling and there's a lot of fluidity and everyone knows their role. And the key is crossover with C-level executive teams, and I've seen it multiple times fail, and everyone has to know their swim lane.
Yep.
If they know their swim lane, they respect their swim lane, everyone will get along.
Totally.
And so I would say that your point, you know, technology, we're excited about our technology, but we're most excited about the team that we've crafted to go into the market. Our board is also been very helpful for us too. I don't know if you want me to elaborate on it, but we got a part of our C-level team. Also, our board is just as, if not more powerful in what we're trying to do. And we split it up. So you have cannabis and you have brand expertise on the board.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I think we can dive into this. I was going to save the money thing for the end, but we can do it now because I think it makes sense. When companies, and we'll talk about Chicago right now, but I mean, I try to, it's more of a global business world, but like in Chicago, we don't raise traditionally large seed and early stage A rounds. We just don't. And Steve Galanis, our buddy over at Cameo, kicked the wall down there with a B2C company that everyone said, what the hell is this? And then a boatload of money. And oh, by the way, yeah, I know all that my friends at the Chicago VCs love to pat their chest that they are involved in it, but it took Kleiner Perkins to kick the shit out of stuff. Like, it took Insight and all these other groups to put real money in play. And you guys, in my mind, are one of the only companies I can think of right now that came out and raised a real round. Like, we talk, oh, I raised a million. Like, okay. Like, it's not going to get you where you need to go.
Couple of rent calls.
And I think the reason, and there's a bunch of reasons why you were able to do this, but one of the things is that board and the board and the team come back to you and your co-founders and the way that you constructed this, which is to recognize that if I want to raise real money and attack a real problem with a real solution and be a real business, I have to understand who I'm talking to. And I have to understand that my insurance policy for them had better be as good as possible. And in that case, it's great minds. And so tell me more about like your thought process as you structure this, because I think a lot of founders can learn from this moment right now, because I think that they look at, this goes back to the arguments about tech, where I sit there and I go, that's cool. It looks flashy. Who's going to sell it? Well, it sells itself. No, it doesn't. Like, somebody needs to know who to sell it to, and that's probably not even the person who's going to sell it to them. Somebody else is going to sell it to them. Like, you need to have thought this whole thing out and mapped it out before you even map out the business, before you even map out the growth and the, you know, the, all of it.
I mean, cannabis industry, I would say you structure it based off the challenge, right? And
totally.
So when you look at it, it's like you don't walk into a meeting as a salesperson and go, here's my product. You walk into a meeting and say, there's a challenge in the cannabis industry, and here's how I'm here to solve it, and I'll walk you through the solution. But that solution is affecting, you need a lot of different people on that solution.
Yep.
So when you look at, you had a chief technology officer. He has a really good experience with engineering. He also has a really good reach in Israel. So we staffed a lot of our engineering in Israel, and I knew that from Eric Shani's perspective that he can help us really tackle compliance.
So you hired a real CTO, not the nearest engineer you have.
No, but
that's another important thing to note.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I just had a report. You were listening, Danny and Aristotle in the room, but they were listening to me talk to a reporter earlier. It's like we raised $18 million because we needed also capital to bring on the credible talent we needed.
Real people.
And, you know, the investors are like, oh, they're very expensive. I go, well, actually, they're taking 80% pay cuts, but they were running large corporations, right? So they all took big risks. Like, none of our current team didn't take a big risk and a loss, but we also needed to raise capital if we wanted to do this the right way to make sure that we were going out in a specific space that eventually will be commoditized like every other space. You have a several-year window to really build something that's unique and defensible. And so that's what I did. That's what we did as a group. Bring people we like to work with that are experienced and the best at their craft and let them go.
I, honest to God, hope that people listen to this show, and I hope that they, first off, if they're in cannabis, that they find you guys first. Like, that's the first thing, which we'll get to that right after this. but this is, and I was thinking this when I was watching the TVs, because I actually, Aristotle had like told me a few things, but he like didn't really share a whole lot other than his workout videos. And I was watching you from afar. I didn't know you. I didn't know the team. I just knew Aristotle. And I was watching going, oh my God, there's the blueprint. The blueprint to success is not a one size fits all deck.
Yeah.
And like, name my most rich neighbor on my advisory board and this random angel and so-and-so. And I piece together and I go, here's how everyone before me solved the problem. Can't you see? I have like, I think that's one of the reasons we have trouble in this city raising and doing big business, is that we sort of like copy this thing as opposed to like, exactly as you said, Chad, I size it to the challenge. I don't give a shit what everyone before me did. It doesn't matter to me because they're not here anymore. So clearly it didn't work. What I care about is, this is a challenge. Here's the TAM. Here's the opportunity. Here's how much it's going to take for us to capture it. And if we want to do it right, it looks like this. And if you don't want to do it right, then you're not doing it with me.
Yeah, I could echo off that a little bit from my experience. I think that being a sole founder in some of my other ventures, scaling that, getting that acquired, then also being, you know, aligned with Marcus, who was, you know, his whole model was SMBs, right?
Yep.
So smaller teams, small to mid-size. And so the challenges I always face, and why Ellison took, was an 8-year grind that didn't stop, is because I was building bottom to top, versus when Chad and I got into the lab with the rest of the founders and the rest of the team, it was like, how do we build from top to bottom? And it was a unique perspective that for the first time I saw. And it was really great, as he said, and echoing off what he said about addressing the challenge and then building down from there. That was the first time that I was introduced to the methodology. And as you could see, and we knew how big it was, like you said, and going back to Chad, almost adopted that methodology in terms of, if you're not going to do it this way, you're not going to do it with me.
Yeah.
And so it was like, it's a big challenge. There's a big mountain. We're starting at the top and we're working our way down. And I thought, and I think that contributed to a lot of our early on success.
First, I just want to tell you, my mom's shades are almost there. They'll be there tomorrow. So exactly. Just a quick shout out for Ellison.
By the way, we sent Ellison sunglasses to all our investors.
Yeah,
still, no one called me. My money's green. What the fuck?
Wait, listen, we're closing around like a week.
I don't know how it's green. I don't know how much of it I have.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
But the thing that I wanted to echo on that, though, it's kind of an important thing, is the selling it short. So like you, whether it's you, Chad, or it's just individuals looking at an opportunity. If you believe, you have a conviction that you know how to do something crazy and do this, I think that a lot of founders, and this isn't just Chicago, this goes across founders, and in which case I think it's a true test, and I don't know the math, but But I suspect if we could go back and do a postmortem on the companies of the ones that shit out after pissing through a lot of money, that the founder was took an early discount to get it going, probably had a lot of failures versus the ones who were like, nope, it's this way or not, because if it's not this way, there's I can't guarantee results, and that's it.
No, I would say that everyone has failures, right?
Yeah.
Last company, we led a lot of M&A, a lot of acquisitions and integrations. While I was doing that, I also started a company.
Yeah.
And I thought we raised the capital on the side, and then we hired someone else to run it, and it didn't work out.
Yep.
And I was like, next time I start a company, I'm going to run the company.
Yep.
And I'm going to make sure we have a team around us that, you know, like we said,
this is
can get us
not
down
something you can do half-assed.
No, this is very time consuming. I mean, raising money, and then we're at 35 employees, and we put out 15 offers in the past 2 weeks. But yep. Raising money and then running a company and making sure that you're ahead of all the compliance changes and making sure that you're talking to every right person, it's more than a full-time job.
So let's talk about the business itself.
Yeah.
What you guys are doing and why it's so novel.
So what we're doing is we're making sure, obviously, each state has different laws.
Yep.
And to run digital is really tough right now because you don't know the laws are ever changing, right? And there's still no white paper on what to do in the digital environment. So what we did was we developed a technology we call CAS, which is Compliance as a Service. And that technology would be integrated into the brand or to the publisher, where you would utilize it, and it would basically age gate. It age gates. It makes you checks all the state by state laws, municipalities, and make sure that by the time that impression served, that you're able to actually run that ad in a safe environment. And so that's
sort of a big deal.
That's part of it, right? And there's another technology perspective that we built, which is called Canabrain. And it's a brain, right? It's basically absorbing all this data. It's scrubbing dispensaries. It's looking at all the consumption that's happening on the web or other arenas, eventually social media, but right now it's a tough environment. But we're looking at every single update that's happening on the web, and we're providing that back to the brand so they know what's going on. Also, basically making them smarter on who they should be targeting.
Yeah.
And then we develop tags is what we do from the brand so that they can implement our tag, and that tag would be the compliant arm to that specific campaign. And there's a lot to the platform, and
yeah.
It's continuing to evolve. We're continuing to hire, and we're really excited that again, back to the team, you have to have the right players. So when we knew that you have compliance around cannabis, you also have all these different compliance regulations around advertising.
Yep.
I don't know if you're familiar with GDPR, but that was a big thing that happened last year. Now there's the California Privacy Protection Act that's also into play. So we went and we hired Nicole Cosby, who started 3 weeks ago. And I met Nicole when I was negotiating contractual terms on behalf of my last job, where she was running Publicis, commercial contracts. Yep. And I was like, who better to come in? And Aristotle's had a lot of experience working with her as well, but who better to come in and help us with making sure that we're following all the laws and building a good compliance technology and our algorithms are being updated than her, right? So
Chad's a great negotiator, but she definitely challenges.
She's very good, right?
She's great.
And then, again, it's like, so yeah, our technology is strictly focusing on cannabis compliance, obviously digital marketing around that, and analytics, right? So how do we allow brands such as Chicago being January 1st, one of the biggest,
yep.
Cresco, Grassroots, GTI, how do you help them develop brand equity in a scalable environment when it's hard to do it right now?
Yeah.
You see a lot of billboards. If you go to LA, you're basically seeing billboards everywhere you go. So how do you track that? How do you actually drive sales? How do you know what's happening? And so we're really helping them transition from, it's crazy to say because we're so advanced, but from archaic methodologies that they have to be stuck to,
yeah.
to now allowing them to get into the environment of digital.
It's interesting to me because like you mentioned how they're, just traditionally speaking, not like native marketers.
Well, some are, but it's not their, by the way, they don't have that many channels to market.
Well, yeah, the obvious is actually getting at the foot, like there's already a problem.
Yeah.
Like that in and of itself as a business, the real piece here is the compliance part, because anyone in the previous generations, this was an alcohol, this was a Philip Morris, this was a problem that a lot of different groups have had where they have, their sales cycles are no different than anyone else. They have to figure out when money's coming in most likely, when are going to be most use cases, when are they hot, whatever. And they go dark and they literally lose millions, hundreds of millions of dollars collectively, billions of dollars collectively, when they can't advertise or they get flagged. And they literally may have, like, we talked to, this did not happen just for clarity's sake, but I was talking to folks over at Cresco, and they were in the middle of the gigantic raise that they had a little while ago, and it was like, oh, we want to do this event. We want to have this, like, big thing. And then it went dark, and they couldn't do it. And there was reasons they couldn't do it, but they couldn't talk about it. And it's like, now you're, like, a partner, like,
exactly.
What are we doing? And it's, that is insanely costly. Yeah. And if you had, I mean, can you imagine if I was, I ran an eyeglass company, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden I'm selling my sunglasses and someone called me and said, nope, because of that ad, you're dark, you can't do this, and you can't enter the market, you can't offer that discount, you can't offer all this. Your entire business model was built on this,
yep.
and it's off.
Yeah, it's crazy, but it's also exciting.
Oh, right. Well, for you, it's fantastic.
I mean, there's so much you can do, and you know, we're lucky enough to start, you know, our investor base. I mean, if we talk about that, but Jason Wild was our lead investor. He is one of the, you know, pioneers of the cannabis space.
Yep.
He's on our board, right? Then you have Lauren Gertner, who was Kronos and Tokyo Smokes, right? So you have, and then the board keeps getting even, you know.
I have to ask, how do you meet all these people? Like, I feel like I meet a hell of a lot of people.
So I met Lauren through my partner, Brent. Clive Serkin and Katie Ford. Katie Ford, I worked with in my past life. Clive was the chief growth officer of Kellogg's and Kimberly Clark. And so we worked together when I was running Amobi, and they were the brands. So Katie was running at Publicis, P&G and Coke, and a couple other big brands. And she's 24 years at Publicis. Clive was also back in the day at Leo Burnett for quite some time, and then transitioned to being the CMO of Kimberly Clark. They've all been super helpful. And by the way, Katie and Clive are Chicago based.
Yeah.
So for us, like, it's great. They travel, they do, you know, they help us out so much, and they bring a different perspective, because in cannabis, it's CPG. It is CPG,
yeah.
right? It's consumer packaged goods. So that's where a lot of this is going to go. And so what we wanted to make sure that you had cannabis experts and that are also brand experts, but also mainstream brand experts. And you combine the two, and you know, you have a very robust board that brings a lot of different perspectives.
I think this is one of those things where if you really wanted to deconstruct and go back to, like, if it was just a couple of Joes that wanted to start this, and they're like, we're going to build tactic and can be a brain, and we're going to source and scrape data, whatever. If you don't understand what it takes to be able to run campaigns and market at the national, global, real players level, it's kind of useless.
Yeah, you have to understand the brand, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say that when you raise capital, like you said earlier, like, you could raise $1 million. Like, if you're a really, you know, I've done it, Aristotle's done it. Like, when you're a younger entrepreneur, but when you get into the sizable raises, you have to build credibility. You have to build substance. And if you don't have credibility and substance, when an investor's doing due diligence on you, back to the early part of the show is, are they going to gamble on people that don't have that? Probably not, especially when they're putting in $5 to $10 million. It's just they need to see that there's maturity and substance on that in the space to make them confident that you're going to be able to figure out the challenge that you're setting out to do.
When you decided you guys were going to do this, was there a moment where you thought, could I actually get all these people?
Yeah.
And well, if not, what do I do?
Well, so I'll tell you the original. So
I think I should maybe give a third party perspective.
Well, I was going to give how I got the push to do it.
Yeah, do it. And so, I'll give you my why I joined.
So I was going through a rough, you know, I was just leaving 8 years of a company that I was running, right? And it was like a family. You just, you know, you started from the ground up, and now you're doing a lot of revenue, and you have over 400 plus employees. And I'm like, I had all these opportunities to go do other things at large companies, and I'm an entrepreneur at heart. That's what I love to do. My wife was like, go do it. Yeah. She's like, go fucking do it. And so then I'm like, okay, she gave me the right push. And then I led into, person by person. It's like, again, it's like, building this franchise. You know, one of my friends is Sean McVay. He's the head coach of the Rams. Yeah. Like, you know, you go out and you think.
It's a good friend to have.
Yeah, he's, and Aristotle knows him, but I brought him to speak to my last company.
They love the glasses.
Yeah.
But of course he did.
I go back to sports analogy because I brought him to speak to our last company. And I was like, because he just took the LA Rams over. He's 32 at the time.
Yep.
And you got to win the respect when you're younger of, you know, people that are more mature and older and been around the game. And so I was like, and he's fixing a broken franchise. And we were buying broken franchises. So I was like, come and speak on behalf. And again, you have to show that you're that person that will do anything. And that's why, I wanted people to surround me that are people that will do anything. And Aristotle is a guy like that. If I'm having a bad day, I know that he can take the ball from me.
And I know he'll do anything.
Yeah. Well, he'll do anything. I mean, I'll give you an example. We were in a small box office in the West Loop, and we're moving to our new office. And here's Aristotle going out, picking up the boxes, and walking from the street. He'll literally do anything. And so, like, it inspires, you know, that every day you need someone different inspiration from someone else because you're going to have a rough day. And so I feel like around the group we have, I could call him up and know that I'll get that inspiration and he'll pick me up. And I know if I'm not in my best mindset, that he'll take the day from me or someone else will take the day from me. Because again, you can't shoulder the workload as one person if you're trying to build something big.
Yeah, totally.
Echoing off that, you know, I think it starts from the top. And, you know, being a sole founder, going through so many different scenarios, having raised so many different ways, dealing with so many adversities, I'm sure people on the other end of this, I could connect with them on so many different levels, from the immigrant story to all of that different stuff, being young and a founder and not having the rich uncle or whatever it may be. And so for me, you know, and now as an investor myself and a multiple founder, it's always been betting on the jockey. And so Chad and I go back nearly a decade. He was the type of guy, though I was persistent and passionate, I do see.
He said annoying. But
yeah, sorry.
He was. That's where he earned my respect.
Totally. If you ask it, the true thing is annoying, but, you know, we'll say passion.
I just want to say, with a great deal of charisma.
Passionate. Oh, my
God. The charm.
But I think he writes really long emails, though. So I had
I was curious. Can I ask you, like, I thought somebody else wrote. Who in the hell?
Oh, no, it's
he's
me.
One of the, so he's, truthfully, like, part of the reason why, he is one of the best writers. So he writes it in like 3 minutes. I'm like, how did you write that essay in 3 minutes? It's crazy to me.
Social media, before there was bloggers and influencers, I feel that, you know, one of the things, and I won't, obviously I'm a talker, so we'll cut myself off, but it was really just telling my story authentically through social media before that was like a thing. And so, you know, going back to 2008 when I met my father and starting to use, this was before Twitter, before all that, I was leveraging
Blogspot stuff.
I was leveraging social media to, because I didn't have anybody. And so I leveraged a place where I could hopefully throw the bait out and see what stuck. And to be honest, that's exactly what happened. And so, you know, for me, it was really when I was looking at Chad, and, you know, I've gone through so many different scenarios. I actually gone through two founders in my last venture. You know, I had an amazing experience, still have an amazing relationship with Marcus. But what that opportunity gave me is really looking at a high level, being alongside Marcus, understanding the M&As and understanding so many different transactions. And what was consistent is obviously the team and how the founder operated at the top. And one thing I saw that was unique to Chad, he's the type of guy that, though when I was persistent, when he said he was going to do it and said, listen, you got the deal, good job, you broke through the barriers, he actually did it and then some. And so he was the type of guy that I knew when I needed, he ultimately, in the B2C or B2B infrastructure that we built with Ellison, gave me enough runway to ultimately lead me to Marcus, that ultimately led to the acquisition. And so there's a lot of things going on, but that was so instrumental. And so I knew how impactful he was for me as in a third degree level. So I could only imagine how important he would be if we were actually doing the same thing at the same time. And so that, I believe, is what resonated with the rest of the team. And so when he told me, you know, it was one call, him and I were talking about,
we actually had lunch at Sweetwater.
Yeah, we had lunch at Sweetwater, and, you know, I was talking about some of the things I was going through, and, you know, we're going through some similar challenges. And basically he said, you know, at the time it was still relatively an idea phase because he was still kind of getting the team, getting the verbal commitments and all that. But I told him straight up, I asked him a couple questions, right? He comes from a big 400 employees. He probably had a 401k, nice little expense account, like all that stuff. I was like, listen, the world I come from, that's not what I, so I want to know. And I wanted to realize that he knew, really understood what the sacrifice was going to take. And, you know, and I'm a person that could say that because he knows I've gone through that. I drove around the country servicing in a Fiat, servicing his accounts. Wow. So when he told me, and I'll finish up here, when he told me, I'm in it and I want you to be a part of this, it, within that conversation next day, we begun. And so became a partner and started this thing.
the Clark Gable of Chicago Tech.
I mean, first off, his radio voice is very soothing. It is. Even though he talks a lot, yes. I was still listening.
My shirt, one of the buttons on my shirt just was undone.
Oh, I'm ready two steps ahead of you, buddy.
I went down, I was like, oh my God, my shirt just, I'm getting hot in here.
He's getting a little ADD on his not being able to Instagram this right now.
Yeah. This is a little twitchy. This is super fascinating stuff. Congratulations, obviously, on all the early success. I can't wait to watch this thing unravel because there's so many things we didn't get to. You'll be on the show like 15 times by the time we're done with this.
But Scott, thank you for...
Yeah, Scott, thank you so much.
And I know that to see what you've built with Technori and WGen is amazing, and we are excited to support you and everything that you're doing and everything that you're doing for the Chicago ecosystem.
You guys are the man.
I appreciate it.
Thank you guys
awesome.
So much.
Thank you.
Where do people go to follow you guys and to learn more about Philo and the whole nine yards?
This is where I come in. Yeah. You could follow us on Instagram at HelloPhilo, F-Y-L-L-O, and HelloPhilo.com.
And where do I get the body shots?
A Loomis. We moved it, so it's going to be A-L-O-U-M-I-S.
There you go.
And you know where to find him in the gym on his regular Instagram.
Yeah. Not so much that anymore, but yeah.
I do have one burning question to end this on. Do you still have the Fiat? Is the Ellison Mobile still around? What's going
on
with
still, this? It's actually...
Is it in a rebrand phase?
He tried to sell it, but the battery's dead.
Yeah. The actual true story, it actually blew up on my last tour. So servicing his account, by the grace of God, it got towed to a auto body in Arizona who does performance cars.
Iowa.
No, that's the second time it broke down. But there's the first time it got left there. The guy, I bought a car from the guy because I was an entrepreneur, didn't have money. It blew up after I just put $5,000 to it. The guy does custom cars, right? And so he gave me he's like, take this car, give me $1,000. It was like old GMC. Long story short, he called me back 2 months later. He knew how important the Fiat was to me. He gave it back, all done up. You probably saw the new version of that. And so I gave him a little piece of the pie of Ellison initially. And after that transaction, I got my baby back all souped up.
That's awesome.
But with the battery problem.
That is such an Aristotle story.
Yeah. Anybody wants it, it's for sale.
Yeah, exactly.
It does have a fuse problem.
It's parts at this point. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you, boss.
To invest in featured startups or apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase, go to technori.com. Boom, that's a wrap.